37-year-old gay guy kissing his husband on stage next to Mr. Man Donald Trump. What's going to happen there?
In most of the country, schools exclude LGBTQ history. We don't learn about the civil rights struggles that our people have engaged in.
I'm so proud to stand here as a black, queer artist telling stories.
Ms. Garland, this is certainly for you.
I'm gonna love you again.
Daddy loves you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Croatia's top court slams foster parent bias, LGBTQ kids crave their history, and queer highlights tread Oscar's footlights. Those stories and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Arlena Bond.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 15th, 2020. Croatia's Constitutional Court acted swiftly to resolve the denial of a gay couple's application to be foster parents. High Court President Miroslav Seprovic explained that the year-old foster care law, specifically excluding queer couples, produces generally discriminatory effects on those couples. According to Seprovic, the court has ordered the courts to directly apply the Constitution and not to discriminate against persons in same-sex communities. The late January ruling was published on February 7th. The Zagreb Administrative Court had ruled in December that prospective gay dads Ivo Zagota and Mladen Kozik had the right to be foster parents. They passed all the qualifying hurdles with flying colors, including psychological evaluations. But the city's social welfare center called the administrative court's ruling just an opinion. The Constitutional Court is Croatia's highest court, so it gets the last word. Its ruling applies to couples living in informal and legal same-gender life partnerships. Conservative voices in the heavily Roman Catholic country claim it is harmful to children, but Rainbow Families Croatia applauded the decision. To them, it's a historic moment in the Balkan nation for qualified same-gender couples to finally have the right to be foster parents on equal terms.
We briefly reported last week on Switzerland's February 9th anti-queer hate speech and discrimination referendum. In the final tally, more than 63% of Swiss voters were in favor of giving gays and lesbians the same protections in law already afforded to people based on race or religion. Coca-Cola bought front-page ads in all the major Swiss newspapers urging a yes vote, and took some right-wing heat for it. The tabloid Blick called the referendum result a bad day for intolerant people. The right-wing Swiss People's Party is the biggest single voting bloc in parliament. They said the vote would silence unwelcome opinions and voices.
Switzerland is one of Europe's few holdouts on marriage equality. A bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples is currently working its way through parliament. Access to medically assisted procreation for those couples is a more contentious issue, probably to be left for another time. The country's leading queer advocacy group, Pink Cross, commissioned a survey the day after the anti-bias vote. In it, 4 in 5 Swiss supported marriage equality. The group's director, Roman Hegley, said that Parliament now needs to take a step forward.
Stepping forward is not what Russia's Vladimir Putin has in mind. During a meeting this week with a commission reviewing changes to Russia's constitution, Putin said that, as far as parent number one and parent number two goes, I've already spoken publicly about this, and I'll repeat it again. As long as I'm president, this will not happen. That could be a long time. The commission is seen as part of Putin's efforts to maintain power even after his scheduled departure from the presidency in 2024. He's been able to maintain that power as either president or prime minister since 1999, thanks in part to an informal alliance with Russia's Orthodox Church. They both reject so-called Western values, including acceptance of divergent sexual orientations and gender fluidity. Both supported the law against promoting so-called gay propaganda to minors in 2013. During the commission meeting this week, Putin also expressed support for enshrining heterosexual-only marriage in the constitutional revisions currently being considered.
Former British Prime Minister David Cameron recalled an icy exchange on LGBTQ rights when Putin told him that Russia's problem was a declining population and he needed men to marry women and have lots of children. Putin has also all but ignored the continuing genocidal persecution of queer people in the semi-autonomous, mostly Muslim Russian region of Chechnya. This week, St. Petersburg police cited that the law against promoting gay propaganda to minors when they shut down a video shoot. It was for a song called Rage, featuring dozens of mostly female and LGBTQ people backing the defiantly feminist pro-queer Russia punk band Pussy Riot.
The political party of openly gay Prime Minister Leo Varadkar placed a disappointing third in national elections this week. His tenure is likely over. Varadkar's center-right Fine Gael party fell behind rival center-right party Fianna Fáil and the left-wing Sinn Féin. Polls show that voters were disappointed in the current government's progress on health and housing issues. The more progressive voices in Ireland's LGBTQ community criticized Varadkar for not doing more to advance queer rights, but he was defended by his partner, Matthew Barrett. Barrett said, "I'm disappointed in the country, not disappointed for Leo. I know he did a great job." Ireland's first lesbian cabinet minister blames a hate-filled social media campaign for the expected loss of her seat, according to Pink News. Catherine Zepone famously proposed to her partner Anne-Louise Gilligan on live television in 2015 following the successful marriage equality referendum. Gilligan died 2 years later after a brief illness. Green Party candidate Roderick O'Gorman celebrated his election victory in Dublin with a widely televised kiss with his partner, Ray Healy.
Four men are under arrest in connection with the murder of Northern Ireland's crusading lesbian journalist, Lyra McKee. The 29-year-old was shot to death while covering anti-government riots in Londonderry in April 2019. The new IRA soon took responsibility, but claimed that their guns were aimed at police officers and that McKee was shot accidentally. One of the men detained under the Terrorism Act this week is 52-year-old Paul McIntyre from Derry. He's been charged with murder, possession of a firearm, and membership in the banned Irish Republican Army. The BBC reported a scuffle outside the courtroom between more than 40 police officers and protesters, with placards calling McIntyre a political hostage and a British scapegoat. McIntyre's next court appearance is scheduled for February 27th. McKee had just signed a book deal and was planning to propose to her girlfriend, Sarah Canning, at the time of her death. But she never lived to see marriage equality come to Northern Ireland. A number of prominent British and Irish politicians joined hundreds of mourners at her funeral. A mural dedicated to her was painted in Belfast.
Eight men were sentenced to 2 years in prison this week in Mauritania for indecency and inciting debauchery. Police officials originally claimed that they had found the men imitating women at an illegal gay wedding posted on social media. Police Commissioner Mohammed Old Najib said the detainees were charged with acts contrary to morality, committing acts forbidden by Allah, and circulating a ceremony of debauchery. The defendants had all pleaded not guilty. Human Rights Watch's Graham Reed said the convictions made singing and dancing at a birthday party a crime. Two other men caught up in the raid were acquitted, and a woman who was also at the party received a suspended one-year sentence. 2 years in prison is not as bad as it could have been. Mauritania is one of 11 countries that execute people convicted of illicit sex. Convictions in the Northwest African nation call for death by stoning, though no such executions are known to have taken place.
A worrisome bill that would have criminalized South Dakota transgender teens and their healthcare professionals is dead, at least for this legislative session. The Republican-controlled state Senate killed the measure this week the House passed in late January. A Senate committee defeated it by a 5-2 vote. The proposal would have sent doctors to prison for providing hormone treatment or puberty blockers to minors. It would also have punished medical professionals for participating in a minor's gender affirmation surgery, an operation that's not usually performed on minors anyway. Any celebrations over South Dakota were quashed the following day, however. Two Republican lawmakers in Ohio announced that they were introducing similar legislation.
Finally, the Lone Star State is suing the Golden State. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton asked the U.S. Supreme Court this week to overturn a 2017 California law that bans government-funded travel to states with discriminatory anti-queer laws. Texas is one of 11 such states, and Paxton himself is notoriously homophobic. The targeted state of Oklahoma retaliated last month with its own ban on state-paid travel to California. A statement from the Office of California Attorney General Javier Becerra said only that they were reviewing the legal filing. Ricardo Martinez of Equality Texas said that Paxton has used religious liberty to justify a number of attacks on LGBTQ rights. He told the Texas Tribune, states that pass discriminatory legislation face economic consequences. The California travel ban is one example. Equality California's Samuel Garrett Pate said that other state officials don't have the prerogative to tell Californians how to spend our money.
And that's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 15th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Marlena Bond.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
If LGBTQ history and culture were taught in schools, young LGBTQ people who haven't come out yet could realize that they are not alone.
The curriculum problem, later in the program.
This is the night of Rush Limbaugh. You chose the airwaves to spread your disease. To kick the people already.
If you were waiting for that other shoe to drop, it has. Pete Buttigieg's status as a Democratic U.S. presidential frontrunner has been confirmed by his successes among voters in Iowa and New Hampshire. Time for the homophobia card to be played. Freshly minted Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient and conservative bomb thrower Rush Limbaugh became the leading anti-queer candidate in that race.
They're sitting there and they're looking at Mayor Pete. 37-year-old gay guy, Mayor South Bend, loves to kiss his husband on the debate stage. And they're saying, okay, how's this good old 37-year-old gay guy kissing his husband on stage next to Mr. Man Donald Trump? What's going to happen there? And they got to be looking at that, and they've got to be saying that despite all the great progress, and despite all the great wokeness, and despite all the great ground that's been covered, America's still not ready to elect a gay guy kissing his husband on the debate stage president. They have to be saying this, don't they? Now, there may be some Democrats who think that is the ticket. There may be some Democrats who think that's exactly what we need to do, Rush. Get a gay guy kissing his husband on stage, to ram it down Trump's throat, and beat him in a general election. Really? Having fun envisioning that.
Well, you know what they say. Fools Rush Limbaugh in.
I am in a faithful, loving, committed marriage. I'm proud of my marriage. And I'm proud of my husband.
Buttigieg on Fox News.
And I'm not going to be lectured on family values from the likes of Rush Limbaugh or anybody who supports Donald J. Trump as the moral as well as political leader of the United States. America has moved on, and we should have a politics of belonging that welcomes everybody. That's what the American people are for. And I am saddened for what the Republican Party has become if they embrace that kind of homophobic rhetoric.
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out.
This is a dream for us. We've never been nominated before for anything like this. Thank you to the Academy.
All the queer Oscars highlights, but first...
Don't know much about history.
That's the point of this month's queer youth commentary by a history-deprived seventh grader.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Lil, an Outcasting youth participant. On this edition, Outcaster Sarah talks about LGBTQ history and culture being excluded in schools.
I happen to be white, but in addition to our own mainly European-American history, in school, we're also taught the history of minorities, as we should be. Take African-American history. It starts in kindergarten with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, three-day weekend. Then we learn about the slave trade, slave ships, and the causes of the Civil War. We learn about the Civil Rights Movement and heroes like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. This education does two things. First, it teaches all of us an important part of history that details the oppression African Americans have experienced and the work that has been done to overcome it. So we learn the history of struggle. And second, it helps young African American students to see their people in their education, which helps build a sense of identity and pride. But why aren't we taught about the Martin Luther King of LGBTQ? Why isn't Harvey Milk, the first openly gay elected official in a major American city, thought of as important in school curricula? In most of the country, schools exclude LGBTQ history. A few states, starting with California, have ended this exclusion. And here at Outcasting, we spoke with the California state senator who sponsored the bill. You can listen to it online, on our website, outcastingmedia.org. But in most of the country, students don't learn about the Stonewall Uprising in 1969, which has been called a turning point in the modern LGBTQ rights movement. We don't learn about the civil rights struggles that our people have engaged in, or the unimaginable losses caused by the AIDS crisis in the 80s and 90s. We don't learn that President Ronald Reagan didn't even say the word AIDS until several years into the epidemic. We don't learn about the medications that transformed AIDS from a nearly universally fatal disease into a chronic, manageable one. We don't learn about the long fights for marriage equality or transgender rights, and so much more. The opposition seems to be based on a false belief. If my kids are exposed, it will turn them gay. If it's put in their minds, the fairy gay mother will come and spray you with gay spray, and poof, there goes the straightness. LGBTQ people make up about 10% of the population. Being LGBTQ is something innate, something we're born with, not something we choose. Straight kids are not going to turn LGBTQ simply by learning about the existence of LGBTQ people and the oppression they've endured and the struggles they've engaged in to overcome that oppression. School is supposed to teach us mathematics and science and history. I want to learn about Harvey Milk, Marsha P. Johnson, Stonewall, and lots more of LGBTQ history. I want to learn about how my community is being oppressed, and I also want to learn about how we have created safe spaces within that as well. Where is this in my curriculum? It's not in it, that's for sure. And I live in New York, a supposedly progressive state. What effects does this cause? First, kids can be very insensitive, using the LGBTQ community as funny jokes, or meaning to insult someone, saying things such as, "That's so gay," "Your mom is gay," and "Your dad is trans." Kids will think that these things are funny because there is nobody teaching them that saying these things is not right or okay. LGBTQ people may be one of the groups it's most acceptable to discriminate against and ridicule. If schools ended the exclusion of LGBTQ history and culture from school curricula, non-LGBTQ students would learn about these things and begin to see that LGBTQ people have endured a great deal and that the LGBTQ community has been full of heroes fighting for equality, something that's supposed to apply to all Americans, but doesn't. It also isolates LGBTQ students, like me, from the history of my own people. It prevents me from feeling a sense of context for my life. It makes me feel a bit adrift when it comes to being LGBTQ. In my own school, I have never learned about any LGBTQ history or issues. In class, nothing more has been mentioned than someone being gay. No more than that. They don't even mention things like that until junior high. I had also never seen a pride flag in classrooms until junior high as well. It wasn't until I joined Outcasting that I even heard of the Stonewall Uprising. In states that are not located on the coasts, this exclusion can have an even bigger impact because there isn't very much positive LGBTQ representation kids can be exposed to. If LGBTQ history and culture were taught in schools, young LGBTQ people who haven't come out yet could realize that they are not alone, and that there are other people like them, and that they have a strong, warm, and welcoming community. So it's probably not a big jump in logic to think that some LGBTQ youth suicide could be reduced if schools provided the education on LGBTQ history and issues that they should. It's outdated and inaccurate to think that people choose their sexual orientation and gender identity. The exclusion of LGBTQ history and issues from schools causes needless suffering. It's time for schools in all states to include education on LGBTQ history and issues, just as they do for other minorities.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, which produces public radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
I'm Stephen Fry. Listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Movies is magic. Real life is tragic. It's time we get away to the movies and magic.
It was the queer movie Magic Wand that brought the 92nd Annual Academy Awards to life during the electrifying telecast opener with Janelle Monáe featuring a cameo by Billy Porter.
It's time to come alive, 'cause the Oscar is so wide. It's time to come alive.
Like a little kid, oh, oh, I'm still after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. Oh.
Tonight we celebrate all the amazing talent in this room. We celebrate all the women who directed phenomenal films. And I'm so proud to stand here as a Black queer artist telling stories. Happy Black History Month.
I'm gonna love you again.
Only one outperformer won an Oscar on February 9th, and he won for Best Song with his longtime songwriting partner. Each thanked the filmmakers and their respective spouses.
And the Oscar goes to Sir Elton John and Verity Toppin for I'm Gonna Love Me Again from Rocketman.
Wow, this doesn't suck. I'll be brief. Okay. Thank you, Academy, fellow nominees. This, needless to say, most of this goes to the people that were involved in Rocket Man. A little bit of this is in every one of their hearts. David Furnish, your tenacity and dedication has driven this train all the way here. Heather Taupin, you have my back 24 hours a day. Your beauty, grace, good humor, just, I love you. All right. And being here with this guy, I don't even know. I don't have words for it. I mean, this is just justification for 53 years of just hammering it out and doing what we do. And so thank you all.
I got to be very quick because we're going over time. Thank you to Bernie, who's been the constant thing in my life when I was screwed up. When I was normal, he's always been there for me. David, I love you so much. Matthew Vaughn, Taron Egerton, what a performance. Giles Martin, for the music. This is a dream for us. We've never been nominated before for anything like this. Thank you to the Academy. Thank you to my fellow nominees for all the great work you do. There's some amazing talent in this room tonight. And wow. And to my beautiful boys who are watching this in Sydney, Zachary and Elijah, how much do I love you? Love you. Daddy loves you. Bye.
Right. Renee Zellweger took home the Best Actress Oscar for her title role in Judy and paid tribute to the iconic star.
This past year of conversations celebrating Judy Garland across genders and, across generations and across cultures has been a really cool reminder that it's that our heroes unite us, you know, the best among us who inspire us to find the best in ourselves. You know, when they unite us, when we look to our heroes, we agree, you know, and that matters. Neil Armstrong, Sally Ride, Dolores Huerta, Venus and Serena and Selena, Bob Dylan, Scorsese, Fred Rogers, Harriet Tubman. We agree on our teachers, and we agree on our courageous men and women in uniform who serve. We agree on our first responders and firefighters. And when we celebrate our heroes, we, you know, we're reminded of who we are as one people, united. And though Judy Garland did not receive this honor in her time, I am certain that this moment is an extension of the celebration of her legacy that began on our film set and is also representative of the fact that her legacy of unique exceptionalism and inclusivity and generosity of spirit, it transcends any one artistic achievement. Ms. Garland, you are certainly among the heroes who unite and define us, and this is certainly for you. I am so grateful. Thank you so much, everybody. Good night.
Here's happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow. Why, oh, why can't I
That was Best Actress Oscar winner Renee Zellweger from the Judy soundtrack. And that's all from the pink carpet in Hollywood. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Taylor Gray and Marlena Bond, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Outcasters Lil and Sarah, produced by Mark Sofus. Nona Hendricks, Van Dyke Parks, and Renee Zellweger performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson, composer, performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Clinton, James Kennedy, and Richard Merton, Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KPOV Bend, Oregon, WRFI Ithaca, New York, 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Do stay tuned.